It's Right Here for You, featuring Tommy Dorsey and his Novelty Orchestra with Dorsey on trumpet and Eddie Lang on guitar. This afternoon on Fresh Air at 4 o'clock, we'll hear from black historian Alan Ballard, whose latest book is inspired by his grandfather's journey in 1917 from South Carolina to Philadelphia, where he hoped to start a new life. He was one of thousands of Southern blacks who moved to Philadelphia to escape the waves of violence that white mobs were inflicting against blacks in the South in the first part of the century. Ballard interviewed many Philadelphia men and women who remember the Great Migration North, and he tells their stories along with his own family's story in his book One More Day's Journey, The Story of a Family and a People. At 3:40, we'll be joined by three women who write erotica under pseudonyms and have published their first collection. The women who are in their 40s and 50s meet regularly to share their writing in a group they call the Kensington Ladies Erotica Society. They say they use the pseudonyms to avoid embarrassing their parents, children, and husbands. More at 3:40. With me now is acclaimed jazz guitarist Pat Martino. In 1980, when Martino was 35, he had already established himself as one of the leading jazz guitarists of the younger generation in jazz, and he had recorded several albums under his own name. Martino had an especial loyal following in Philadelphia, his hometown. In 1980, Martino had to undergo emergency surgery to remove an aneurysm on the brain. He awoke from the surgery without any memory of his past. His memory of the past has not returned, and over the past 5 years, he's tried to piece together the first 35 years of his life. He's relearned how to play guitar, and he started his performance comeback last summer playing a small club in Cape May. During the fall, he performed Monday nights at Grendel's Lair on South Street, and recently he performed in New York. Pat Martino now lives in Philadelphia. Before we meet him, let's listen to a recording that he made in 1972. This is a recording of Alone Together, which also features Billy Higgins on drums and Richard Davis on bass. Thank you. Alone Together is recorded in 1972 from the album Footprints, featuring my guest Pat Martino on guitar, on second guitar Bobby Rose, along with Richard Davis on bass and Billy Higgins on drums. My guest is Pat Martino, who is performing again after 5 years. He had in 1980 emergency surgery to remove an aneurysm on the brain. And Pat Martino, it's wonderful to have you back again, and welcome to Fresh Air.
Well, Terry, thank you so much.
What do you think about when you listen back to one of your records from 1972, from before the operation?
I'm surprised. You know, more than anything, I'm surprised, primarily because no matter when it is, I'm functioning creatively as much as I possibly can. And my mind is attuned to that specific target. When I'm exposed to the past, in most cases I'm very surprised, because back in those years I saw it as something different than I see it now. When I hear it now, it's part of now. When I heard it then, now has nothing to do with then. So it's very difficult for me to find a place that I can honestly name a work, you know, for a great length. It always changes.
Do you find yourself trying to recapture the way that you played in the past?
No, I don't.
Has your music changed a lot?
Absolutely. There are certain things within my style that have remained, just for my own career. The sake of my own career identification.
Did you have any indication before your surgery that something was going wrong and you were going to have an emergency to cope with?
I felt that every evening before I went to bed.
Did you really?
Yes. There was going to be an emergency the following day. Primarily because I had no idea what was taking place when I would go through a surge of these problems, which at that particular time were physical. In the medical profession at that time, surgery, they didn't have CAT scan. Therefore, the only thing they could possibly do is to put me in touch with a psychiatrist, a psychoanalyst, a psychologist. And many, many times it seemed that there was no solution. And I spent quite a number of years under the impact of shock treatment, under the impact of locked wards, including Bellevue in New York City. All of these things were quite an experience, but at this particular point, right now, they really mean nothing other than the fact that I feel good that I've endured. I feel good that I have. There's a way of saying it. The end resultant is an elder, one who has experienced, and from the experience gains wisdom, as opposed to a student who studies, and from taking in that information, taking that education, the only thing the student will get is information. So there's a difference between information and wisdom.
When you were diagnosed as having the brain aneurysm, I think the doctor told you that you really might not survive the operation, or you might only live without the operation for 2 more days.
Yes.
Can you recall if you did anything to prepare yourself for what might have been the end of your life?
Well, I did. You know, at the very moment that particular neurologist, the moment he told me, he said, please sit. There's something very important for me to say to you. And I sat, and he said, this is what we've found. You have aneurysm in the brain. And he described what it was. And he said, approximately, I would say that you have 2 days to live. It should be done immediately. The first thing that emerged into my considerations at that moment was, what have I done with my life? Here I sit at the train station, and I'm leaving here. And where's this train going to take me? And I was very, very happy about what I did with my life. I thought of all of the gifts and blessings, the beautiful, beautiful people, those I liked, those I disliked. I learned so much about myself in a flash. At the end of the flash, I was pleased. I was very pleased. I was ready for this to happen. Then the next thought was, here I am in California. My mom and dad are on the East Coast in Philadelphia. And myself being their only child, it would be a terrible, terrible experience for them to lose me at such a distance. So my decision at that point was to call them immediately and tell them what was happening. In doing that, they immediately set up an appointment for me to go into the Pennsylvania at 8th and Spruce immediately. So the following morning I flew back and went from the airport to the hospital. It happened very fast. They gave me two operations. The first was on, and this was in 1981. The first was Good Friday, looking into it religiously. The first was Good Friday, and it didn't work. I went into a coma. They took me out of the coma on Easter Sunday with a second. And it was like a play being reconsidered, you know, realized once again. The Good Friday and the Easter Sunday, since I was born and raised a Roman Catholic. So here I sit at the end of that, and I have a blank mind, completely blank. In fact, I didn't even remember Mom or Dad's name.
Did you remember anything about yourself when you woke up from the coma?
Yes, I had a beard. I needed a shave.
Did you remember your own name?
No.
I'm trying to imagine what it would be like to be an adult without any memory at all. It's something that you could possibly put into words what that experience was like?
Are you saying an adult? Let me get this right. You're saying an adult with no memory at all.
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine what that experience would be like to awake from a coma as an adult where you actually have a past but to not be able to remember it.
That's a very interesting question. I see two sides of that. I see one side, quite negative, primarily because what you've described as an adult, which has been emptied, who has been emptied completely. And then I see another side. I see an empty glass. And I see the world as a container of some of the most incredible liquids there ever was or ever will be. And no matter how the glass that person was and now is a glass, no matter what shape that glass is, it will hold that fluid if it's poured in. So it's not memory. It's not memory at all. In fact, it's to me, and of course it's only my opinion, is to be able to focus with no distraction to to what is coming to you, what is coming before you. Not what you would like, not what you would expect, certainly not what you would hate, not what you would judge, but what it is.
But I was thinking that it was really possible that you might have emerged a totally different person from the person who you were before the operation, because so much of how we direct our lives is based on the opinions that we have and the way we've defined ourselves, the way the people around us have defined us, and the patterns that we've developed. And if you erase some of those patterns and you start over again, you might have different tastes, different directions, a different identity that you acquire the second time, a different you.
Very true.
Do you think that happened with you?
Oh, it's happened with me many, many times.
I can really? Yeah. It's like starting over.
Humorously, I can describe one for you. There were times, spiritually, that I was extremely angry with God, the concept God. So I was so angry that I turned his name backward, and I turned it into dog. Well, dog happens to be my favorite little animal. So here I'm in love with God, and I'm telling God, you shouldn't have done this. When are you going to help me? I can't take any more of this. When are you going to come? You know. And then he turns into a little dog, and I forget my anger, and I think of the beauty of a little pup, and I thank him for that. So that's spelling his name backwards. Now, if someone on the other side of such vision were to see opposites as good and bad, back and forth, up and down, in and out, black and white, over and under, they too must take a look at God Dog, and many, many others. Many others. And because they become one thing at that point. That is what really has changed more than anything, because I don't have too much time to fill myself with information that could only be a speck in a cosmos.
Have you found yourself talking to family and to friends to find out about the first 35 years of your life, the part whose memory was erased after the surgery?
I haven't. I can't say that I've discussed that in depth, and I say this because I myself personally, when this topic does arise, and it has, it's difficult for me to be carrying, which has been done a moment before, a new composition, and the energy in it is still in my mind, and I may sit. And someone may ask about something in 1962 or 1961. How did you like Club Harlem? Way back then, Sammy Davis. It's difficult for me to relate and say, well, I thought it was great. And of course, the other person is saying, it was so great, so wonderful. It was, it was, it was, it was. And I say, it was. What about now? I find that difficult. As you yourself pointed out, and several others have pointed out, that many of my opinions are Zen-oriented, although I have not pursued to look deeply into Zen.
People's perceptions of us are so subjective, you know, and I was thinking that if you had gone back and spoke to different people to piece together what you were like, to piece together the part of your memory that was erased, that you'd get probably like 100 different pictures of who Pat Martino was and what he liked and how he played and what, you know, what kind of person he was. And then you'd have to choose which of those people's perceptions you were going to really trust. You know?
And I wouldn't have any of them to begin with. The first thing I would do if I were to turn that into a need what I would immediately erase reality. And I can't afford to do that.
Do people offer remembrances of you to you a lot?
Constantly.
And what do you do when that happens?
I'm pleased to see them. I'm pleased to see them happy, to see them creative, to see them laugh, to see them serious. Here I sit, a man where someone comes before him, and this someone says to that man, "I've enjoyed what you've done with your life." And the man, silently within himself, says, "I enjoy what you've done for my life right now." That's what I attain from such.
So you're glad that they're glad to be sharing these memories, but those memories themselves are of no interest to you?
There are no meaning in them.
Do you go through, like, your old bedroom at your parents' house and find old photographs or...
Oh, yes, I do. Not mm-hmm. many, because Dad and Mom, they've got them bagged and packed. And they just have pictures everywhere.
Is it important to you to see that?
It's important for me to see them at ease, at comfort, enjoying all of the things that surround them.
My guest is Pat Martino, if you're just joining us. And he's a guitarist who has recorded extensively, lives in Philadelphia, and is performing again after several years of not performing following emergency surgery to remove a brain aneurysm. And that surgery erased a lot of his memory of the period of time before the operation. A lot of people, when they are either sick or stricken with some kind of problem, don't like to let other people know. For various reasons, sometimes because it's embarrassing for anyone to know that something that personal about yourself, and sometimes because people interpret illness as something that you've somehow unconsciously brought on yourself. Did you go through anything like that when you were recovering, of not wanting anyone to know, or of being almost ashamed of what had happened?
That's a very good question, Terry. I have to say that I experienced both sides of that coin. When I did come from the hospital and I was walking again, I could walk by that time, I was still bald because I shaved all of my hair off. So I just so happened to purchase a beautiful handmade suede hat. And I purchased it in Vail, Colorado, because it was snowing and it was windy, and I put it on. So here I had a hat that was really a very nice hat, and it was very comfortable. And I went to a restaurant with a friend, and we walked in, and the maitre d' stopped us, and he turned his face to me, and he said, "I'm sorry, no hats are available in here." Now here, the first feeling I felt was that part of me which did not want anyone to see me bald. Okay? But then there's another part of me to utilize that and to be entertaining as I'm doing it. So I said, "Is the owner here?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "May I speak to the owner?" And he came out, and I tipped my hat to him and put it back on, and we didn't say a word. The owner said to the maitre d', give them the finest table. So it was entertainment almost.
Was there a scar on your head that you had revealed too by tipping the hat?
Of course, yeah. But it was entertainment in mm-hmm. that sense, to see see what would happen if you how someone would react to the show, you know.
What about all your fans who were wondering where you were before people knew what had happened? Did you want them to know?
I really, I haven't so much cared about that. I haven't had any, I haven't had the time to worry about what they know and what they don't know. Other than the fact that hopefully they know I love them. No, I didn't.
When did you think that it was time to start picking up the guitar again? Before I even ask that, I mean, did you know for sure that you were going to do it? Because you had a choice to never play guitar again if you wanted to. At least I should think you'd have had that option. It's not an option that you chose. But, you know, did you consider, well, maybe I just won't play anymore?
I did consider that. And in doing so, I shifted to a different mode of creative productivity. Instead of using a guitar, I used a pencil. And in this very same way that I improvised and expressed myself on guitar, I improvised and expressed myself with the pencil. And I wrote and wrote and wrote. And I have approximately now over 1,570 pages for three volumes of work for the guitar and for other instruments also. So in that context, I was again within the, a good word, it's just hard to define, within the veil of that instrument, even though I didn't open that veil and touch it even more nearly, more close than that. I went through about a year and a half of that, just writing, until I finally became very, very depressed, very tired of spending, I would say, up to 15, 16 hours per day, every day, in my study, at my desk. And I said to myself at that point, what am I going to do? Just stay in a little room forever? I can't do this. Well, how can I get out? I thought of many, many things. At that time, I even thought of moving to Las Vegas, where one of my favorite cousins lives, who does very well there. He's a manager. And I was going to get a job in Las Vegas as a dealer and just sort of slip into the crowd, into the masses, and never be seen again, so that I wouldn't have to live up to a reputation that I had no idea would stand against me as opposed to lift me. So I had to make quite a number of decisions in that. There were periods of, along those ways, they were highly full of very negative feelings, especially in the sense of depression. Until finally the only answer for that was to be active in any kind of way. In other words, you reach a point where you've asked for so much, and you can't even ask for anything anymore, so suddenly you get up, and wow, that's all you had to do to begin with, was get up, and don't sit there and think about these things.
And that's when you started playing guitar again?
That's when I started to come back to life.
Now, how did you begin with the guitar? Where did you start on that so as to not be frustrated by having forgotten so much?
Okay, well, musical instruments, like anything else, contain what you would call substitutions to place into use. Let's say butter has a substitution. Margarine. Sugar has a substitution, sweet and low, and many others. Well, with regards to my substitutions for many of the forms that would come before me, I didn't have many substitutions. And these were the secret keys to be able to improvise over forms that were so complex that the given name of that form as a chord to play a melody through, it was so complex, I didn't know what you would do. I had forgot all of my substitutions, and I never learned anything about the original names. I had broken everything down into one thing, one substitution for all. One is all and all is one. That is what I had to pull back together again.
How do you think your playing compares now to the playing that you hear when you listen back to your old records?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer. Primarily because those days, when I was recording, I was interested in many, many things in the profession. I was interested, it was my career. I was interested in prosperity, choosing that for a target as a child. Unfortunately, to make a decision of that nature as a child, it's difficult not to fall into a thing some years later that you're sorry about what you chose. Let me put it to you that way. I did these things very well, what I initially chose to do as a child. After the operation, by that time I saw that when I got to the target, it wasn't the target I thought it was, to begin with. It's like if you do what everyone says. When someone says, do this, you'll be the best. All you have to do is do this. And you do it. And no one cares. So I had reached that, and I enjoyed playing for myself. After the operations, all of it disappeared, and I enjoy playing like a child at this point. I'm self-taught. So the way I taught myself how to teach myself about, or rather with a guitar, I taught myself with computer. I went out and purchased computer. I didn't open the manuals, the instructions. They're still wrapped. And why? Not for any other reason than to uphold my own identity, which is a child that can play and have a great amount of fun, no matter what you put in that child's hands. All things are toys. And then you have creative productivity, as opposed to a target.
Do your fingers remember in the same way that, you know, they say you can never forget how to ride a bicycle? Do you think that, like, your fingers remembered certain ways how to move?
Yes, they did, subconscious. But muscular, took a great deal of muscular therapy to gain the strength back. And, of course, callus. Many things.
Since we can't hear you play on the program today, unfortunately, would you want to describe the kind of music that you're playing now?
Well, when you say the kind of music that I'm playing now, I must be honest with you. What I'm playing on guitar publicly, primarily a quintet, a rhythm section, guitar and flugelhorn, I'm playing fusion music. But the music is highly commercial in terms of pretty melodies. On the other hand, privately, when I'm not doing anything publicly, I'm composing in my study, and I'm writing things for symphony considerations, string quartets, big horns, I'm orchestrating things. So I don't play the same way. I'm playing in a completely different environment. The tools there are completely different. There's a guitar there. There's a full rack for recording. There's an excellent library. There's a computer. And there's no one to distract me. So I enjoy that very much. But I don't take that out.
Do you think you will sometime?
Well, I wouldn't take it out in that very same way, because the moment you utilize silence for your own good, if you were to do the same thing on the outside, it would be kind of crude not to expect others to say hello to you. And that's the thing that'll break the silence. you see. So I leave all of the silence in the study, and I come out and say hello.
Do you ever go through periods now, you know, now that you're performing again, and you know you have a life? Do you know?
Yes.
Do you ever go through periods of still feeling angry or bitter though about what happened?
Well, I still experience anger, but I don't specifically call that anger or point that anger out in what happened. It's just something that's a part of me that, thank God it's there. It does remind me, in my own case, it helps me to attain humility. Because if I'm under conditions where someone bursts in anger, I see that as a fault. I don't judge the person. I say to myself, would you like to be this way all the time? No, I wouldn't. And then I forget about that. And then when the anger pops up, I say to myself, oops, me too. And it's good for me. So I really, it's difficult for me to look back and complain about anything.
Okay. Well, listen, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, Terry, it's
today,
my pleasure.
I look forward to the opportunity of hearing you play sometime.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for being here.
It's my pleasure.
And my guest has been Pat Martino, who is a guitarist who hadn't been performing or recording for several years while he recuperated from emergency surgery that he needed to remove an aneurysm on the brain. That surgery left him with very little memory of the first 35 years of his life. He's now performing again, and will, I hope, soon be recording again as well. Pat Martino grew up in Philadelphia and has been living in Philadelphia again since the surgery. Why don't we listen to another recording? We'll go to a recording on the Muse record label. It's called Exit. This was made in 1976. And this is a recording featuring Pat Martino on guitar, one of his own compositions. It's a three bass hit. Thank you. Thank you.